Hello, everyone, and welcome to Note to Scene, a music news podcast covering everything from pop punk to metalcore. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, where every week we discuss and debate all the biggest news stories in the music scene. Find more episodes of this show on Apple Podcasts, where you should please rate and review us. Email us at notescene@gmail.com. So much to talk about this week. Big news from Fall Out Boy and Paramore. But first, we're going to talk about the Vans Warped Tour, which will be coming to an end in 2018. End of an era is an understatement. All right, let's go. All right, let's knock out some listening questions. We are getting backed up here.
Sounds good, man.
Our first question comes in from listener Nick C, who writes into notescene@gmail.com. Nick said, well, Nick actually has 2 points to make and then a question. Nick says, hey guys, I wanted to start off by saying I really enjoy the podcast. However, I can only hear about Taylor Swift so much. What is with all the talk about pop music? Our industry is in turmoil and is legitimate, and I'm legitimately concerned for it, and we're talking about Taylor Swift halfway through a podcast titled Emo is Canceled. It's just my opinion, but I still enjoy the show for what it is. You're right, Nick. Tyler and I obviously adore pop music, and I think we can take it a little too far at times. The Taylor thing with that week was sort of, we were feeling pretty down on the scene, and I think we kind of got through as much as we could stomach of all the talks of all the allegations and all that bullshit. And the Taylor record coming out was kind of an escapist thing for us, and
definitely.
I think that was kind of our intention with the show, was to make it an escapist thing for our listeners as well, because we were just kind of like, fuck the scene that week. Like, you know, we got through the allegations we could, and then we just wanted to talk about Taylor. But you're totally right, we get way carried away. You know, the pop story will always live and will always be there, but it should be the quick hit story that it was always intended to be, and we will try to be more mindful of our pop talk in the future. Nick and any other listeners, you know, feel free to put us in check if we ever go off the rails, which, let's face it, we probably will again at some point in the future.
Absolutely.
As this scene dies, it's getting harder and harder, you know, not to look away towards other places of music. Also, though, when it comes to Halsey or Lorde, you guys are kind of stuck with them. Sorry.
It's just Nick's the way it is.
Absolutely. Nick's next point. Also, if you're going to talk about things on the podcast, such as allegations, provide a little more context, please. I understand that you don't want to be associated with spreading the rumors or tarnishing someone's name, but I sort of use your podcast to keep up with the scene, as I don't have time like I used to follow the blogs and such. I listen to the podcast on the way to work, so I can't exactly Google what the hell you guys are talking about while I'm driving. First off, Nick, I'm really happy that you're using our podcast as a news source like that.
Totally.
And it's helping with your commute. That's really dope. But it's not so much about tarnishing someone's name. I was vague on purpose on that episode, and it's more for legal reasons. You can get sued for defaming someone or slander or saying things like that. And as a former journalist who's been threatened and knows journalists who have been sued by musicians, it's something I don't take lightly and I don't fuck around with. So I will not be putting my head on the legal chopping block to save you from doing a Google search. That is where I draw the line.
Totally. It's difficult to understand, and I totally get where Nick and other listeners are coming from that I've talked to about this past episode. But Matt and I worked in a world where being sued is essentially normal, and it's honestly terrifying at some points. So,
and we don't have a giant publication like Alternative Press with an entertainment lawyer backing us anymore. So we have to watch what we say. That's all it is. And the information is available on the internet, and you're going to have to look for it in that case. Hopefully, though, we don't have to have too many of those fucking episodes. I'd rather not, you know.
Hopefully, man.
On to Nick's question. Okay, Nick says, after all this bitching, I do have a question. With all that is happening with our scene right now, allegations, Warped Tour changing, our favorite bands putting out shit music, and low album sales, do you think the industry will actually die? How can it be saved? What will be the final nail in the coffin? Thanks for doing what you do. I think, yes, Nick, it's dead. It has finally died. And I think Warped Tour was the nail in the coffin. That's kind of my short answer. It's over, man. Like, this is the beginning of the end to me. How about you, T-Sharp?
The ship is currently taking on more water than ever before. And if you've listened to the podcast,
you already hit the fucking iceberg, man. Like, we're going down.
Yeah, the Titanic is sinking. It's time to grab a life raft. We've talked about it all year. We talked about it before Warped Tour started when we were talking about the lineup. We talked about how all the biggest releases, most anticipated albums of this year have essentially failed. There hasn't really been a massive success story. And the one that you could argue has just been, you can go listen to last week's episode to hear about that one. There's just, the light at the end of the tunnel looks dimmer now than it ever has been before. And we're going to get into this more during our Warped Tour talk. So I don't want to spoil it too much, but take Matt's short story. It's time to get what you can and get out, because things are not looking good right now.
It was already dark, and then we lost the most important thing to the scene.
Yep.
So, you know, just take that as you will, and you can assume dark times from here. I feel like Note to Scene will be shifting into a phase of covering the demise of the scene. I think we're entering that phase of operations here. Okay, let's move on. Our next question comes in from listener Sarah F., who writes in, "Hey guys, I absolutely love your podcast and listen to it on the way to work every Tuesday when it drops in Australia. Shouts to all our Australian listeners."
Hell yes.
"I was wondering what your thoughts were on the Hoteliers' Home Like No Place Is There. Personally, it's a 10 out of 10 album for me. Do you guys enjoy it? And were you also upset by the band's departure from their previous sound in their follow-up? Love from Down Under, Sarah." Sarah, we are so glad to be a part of your morning commute. Commutes are a bitch, and that honestly warms my heart to hear. As far as the Hotelier goes, it's not for me. And this is not an indictment of your musical taste in any way. That record is very well respected by a lot of people I know and like and respect. And a lot of people also say it's a 10 out of 10 album. But I've tried to connect with it. I just have never been able to. I don't know what it is I'm missing. I don't know if I'm just not that, you know, second wave emo person that liked Weezer's Pinkerton and just couldn't get into this kind of thing. But that record, it was a weird spot I found myself in, where that record is just, you know, it got universal critical acclaim.
Mm-hmm.
Most people will say it's the best, most established music critics will say it's like the best emo record of the last like 10 years or something. And it just never connected for me. And I'm just not cool enough, I guess. So with regards to them moving on, by the time I checked it out when they moved on to the new sound, but that to me, that was even less relevant. How about you, T-Sharp?
Yeah, I'm in the exact same place you are with it. We've talked about this album off the show before, and I was bummed during its release campaign, and everyone I knew was talking about it. And I was just like, what am I missing? Because I'd sit down and I'd listen to these songs when the singles were coming out, and I sit down and listen to the whole album front to back, and I'm like, I'm just missing it. I'm in the exact same boat you are. I that music just doesn't appeal to me personally. But obviously, right, it was a very important album for that world, and they're critic darlings. Like, that's exactly what that band is, and it is.
I mean,
a
they
shame.
Were peak emo revival.
For
you
sure,
know, that's the emo revival album everyone will point to as like the beacon of the emo revival, the totem to it.
Absolutely. And it's a shame that they fell off so much with that second album, because there was some genuine hype there. I mean, it wasn't like commercial yet, but it felt like it could kind of get there in the future if they kept the momentum going. But that second album really fell off.
Yeah, they were one of those bands that they were just never really actually that big, you know, and they got all of the attention they didn't necessarily deserve. They really weren't that big of a band. So when that record came out, there wasn't, you know, it was the same, you know, 100 critics and really dedicated music fans on Twitter talking about it.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It wasn't a big fan base.
No. Nope.
But we got to move on. We thank Nick and Sarah for writing in. If you have any questions, feel free to send them in to notescene@gmail.com and we will answer them on the show. But we got to move on, Tyler, and hit our main story this week, which is Warped Tour. So the Vans Warped Tour announced that it is coming to an end. 2018 will be the final run. This is kind of crazy news, Tyler.
This was too much to handle this week, man.
Yeah, we had a bad week, you know, and then this happens. And, you know, let's face it, attendance was way down.
Absolutely.
We knew that much, at least.
And we knew it going into it. If you go back and listen to our episodes where we talked about the Warped Tour and the lineup, and then we did a rumors episode and multiple segments dedicated to the upcoming year of Warped Tour, and we said it doesn't look good because they don't have big bands that can carry the tour. They had I Prevail, Neck Deep, Beartooth. Those were your three biggest bands, and Beartooth wasn't even on the full tour. So you had I Prevail and Neck Deep. I Prevail don't even want to be here. We're finding out the Neck Deep hype is false because they released a shitty album the second time around, and they couldn't follow up their peak.
You know, I think, well, they sold a lot of records. So I think Neck Deep, like, were the one band that actually had success on Warped Tour that year.
It turned out to be false because people aren't really backing the record.
Yeah, but I think they had a decent run on Warped Tour. I just think all the other headliners didn't. I think they were the only one that really had any success.
I would agree with that to an extent. I think they wrote a
fan. I mean, they sold 30,000 copies first week.
I know.
The hype was there. But the Warped run worked.
If you notice, that album has sold like 39,000 since then, since the end.
Well, yeah, because it's shit.
Exactly. That's just the point I'm trying to make. Like the hype was.
But I'm talking about in the context of Warped Tour,
right?
Not they in the context of post Warped Tour.
They had a good run, but it's just that band shouldn't carry that tour. That band should not be the biggest band on the tour, and that's what we said at the beginning of summer. And look where we're at now. I don't have stats to compare from every date from 2016 to 2017. Some of them just haven't been released to the public, but as far as the box office tickets that I've compared and done the math on, it's upwards of 50% drops at some dates.
It's rough, to say the least. There are a lot of dates where only 5,000 kids showed up. You know, 6,000 kids showed up
out of a 20,000 ticket
Warped Tour. You could do 10 to 15 to 20,000, you know, in the peak days. It's right. You know, we get into the why this specific Warped Tour was so bad. And you kind of mentioned it, Tyler. There were no headliners, you know, no Pierce, no A Day to Remember, no Bring Me, no Sleeping Even, no Mayday, no Falling in Reverse. Even. Like you needed the big bands and they just weren't there, you know, and Kevin chose to put Neck Deep and I Prevail on. And we just knew it. And then bringing on the old bands, we knew it was going to sink. We knew this tour was going to be a disaster. And it was. And getting back to the why, one of the things I kind of wonder is, you know, there was all the controversy with Warped Tour the last 3 years. You know, you've had everything Front Porch Step to Johnny Craig, the infamous fucking town hall gathering, which was just,
don't remind me,
was
man.
An insane thing to cover at AP. We've had, you know, the Dickies outburst on stage. I'm just totally me speculating. I wonder if Vans wanted to pull the plug on their sponsorship finally. Like, do you think, is there a possibility here that Vans was like, it's time to distance our brand from this environment that is getting toxic? Do you think that's possible?
I think it's absolutely a possibility. I don't want to speculate too much because I don't know for a fact, but when you put everything into perspective, it's absolutely a possibility because at the end of the day, Warped Tour has downsized like tenfold at this point. It's crazy.
Not only was it downsizing, it was just, you know, whether you agree with it being toxic or not, it was being attacked by the media.
Right.
You know,
it was getting bad publicity.
Was getting negative press. And do you want your brand Vans? At what point do you say,
for sure,
Vans, we're doing pretty well. We got Damn Daniel. You know what I mean? Like, do we need Warped Tour anymore? You know?
Yeah. And that breaks my heart, man. Do we need Warped Tour anymore? Because that's what it comes down to with sponsors. Yeah.
One of Lyman's quotes, you know, Kevin Lyman, founder of Warped Tour, he did an interview with Billboard. One of the quotes that stuck out to me, he said, you know, he was speaking of the 2018 tour that's coming up, and he said, I want to go have fun. It hasn't been fun the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it's felt for me, like, you know, in my dealings with Kevin and through AP and working with Warped Tour. These last three tours that just... something about them, it just hasn't been the same. You know, the last Warped Tour that felt like a Warped Tour to me was the one, I don't know if it was 2013 or 2014, but, you know, Of Mice and Men were on it, Mayday Parade were on it, Falling in Reverse were on it.
Yeah, I think that was 2014.
Yeah, that was the last time it really, like, Echo Smith ran on, I think. It was just, like, the last time it really felt Warped Tour-y to me.
Yeah.
Ever since then, it's just been downhill.
Yeah, it has. 2013, Bring Me were on it. And right. I remember going to that one and watching their set. Like, I couldn't even see the stage. I was so far
back.
It is
kind of, that was kind of like the last big boom one, I'd say, you know.
I went to that Warped Tour and I was like, things are healthy, things yeah. are good.
And then 2014 happened, and that tour, you know, low-key, it was a disaster to start, and it didn't, about halfway through, it didn't start taking off until Of Mice and Men hopped on, because
yep.
they were at their peak at that moment. And everybody who worked for Warped Tour that year says Of Mice and Men saved that. When they got on it, all of a sudden the crowd doubled, and it was just right when they were at their peak, and it was just sort of a symptom of it, you know. But so it's interesting too, another thing to look at when we're thinking of Warped's demise is, like, Warped Tour used to break bands, and it's weird to think about, but, like, think about Paramore. I think, like, Warped broke Paramore in a big
way.
Absolutely. Think about A Day to Remember. Warped Tour, like, broke A Day to Remember. Think about, on a different level, like, Bless the Fall. Warped Tour absolutely broke Bless the Fall. Like, their 2007 run was legendary. It made them the band, you know, they became with Craig before he left. It's like, how long has it been since Warped Tour genuinely broke a band? Like, can you remember one?
You just named off the last time they really broke bands. Because, honestly, man, 2013 looked like it was going to be a year that Let Live were going to break out. And that's the last band I can think of where we had that conversation about, Warped Tour, like, was about to break another band. And we haven't it looked like it. And we haven't had that conversation since. And Let Live just fell the fuck apart.
For a minute there, it looked like Let Live, it was going to happen. They were going to get the main stage bump. Mm-hmm. And we were going to have another Under Oath or something. You know what I mean? And it's just, I can't think of the last time Warped Tour's really just broke a band. You know, Warped Tour played a big role over the years in breaking everyone from, like, Gwen Stefani, No Doubt, you know, to, like, Eminem, you know, Blink, mm-hmm. Fall Out Boy. Like, Warped really used to break bands. And I think that's another symptom of why Warped's going away and the lack of success. They're not breaking bands anymore.
Absolutely. And if you want to go a little deeper, from First to Last and Under Oath, like, go watch those videos of them playing on, like, the Kevin Says stage and Sonny mm-hmm. Moore climbing up those little pillars.
They legendary.
Were packing out those fucking stages around them. It was insane to see. And see Under Oath playing in 2003 on this super, super tiny stage. It's crazy to see what that tour did for bands. And then you hear about them talking in interviews about how they got bumped up to main stage and they were playing next to Thursday. And they couldn't believe mm-hmm. it, what was happening to them at that point. And it was all because of this tour.
So another big kind of problem, the average age of the tour was up to 19 years old, and it used to be 14 to 17.
Right.
And that really is the sweet spot of fandom, 14 to 17. I mean, that's your most dedicated fans. Those are the people mm-hmm. you want coming to your tour. They have their parents' money. They're going to buy everything. The average age going up to 19, I think, was a very bad sign for Warped Tour, because it's always been about the kids, you know, and it finally wasn't.
Absolutely. And Kevin says in that interview, he talks about how if you're not going to shows between 14 and 17, it's not ingrained in your system. You're more unlikely if you start going to shows at 19 and beyond to get that itch. You know, the show itch. If you've listened to the show, if you've ever been a part of the scene, you've probably had that show itch before. I used mm-hmm. to go to so many shows a year, and I mean, I'm just older now. We've got more priorities in life, but when I was a kid, that's all I wanted to fucking do, was just go to shows every weekend, and if I could, on weeknights. It's heartbreaking. That I keep coming back to that word, but it's heartbreaking to watch the scene fall apart this way. There's not a new generation coming in to save it. It's always been this cycle, you know. New kids were coming in, they were discovering the bands. Lower bands were getting a bigger push because more young kids were coming in, mm-hmm. paying attention. Nobody's paying attention anymore because the bands aren't there and the labels aren't signing the right ones and the music mm-hmm. sucks. And we could just go on and on and on about why it's the way but it is.
Kevin was very aware of that problem, mm-hmm. which I was surprised during the interview. You know, Kevin talks like these bigger scene bands disassociating themselves with the scene and with Warped Tour, you know, because they want to be perceived as cooler. You know,
that quote, man.
Yeah, like think Bring Me the Horizon is your perfect example. Those dudes want to go be playing Coachella now. They don't want, they're never going to play Warped Tour again, you know? And that, it, that's part of the reason. Your biggest band, you know, Warped Tour helped build that band and make them who they are. You know what I mean? And now that they would be the biggest headliner of Warped Tour, they're not going to play anymore, you know? And it's not even just them, it's other bands. You have a lot of these smaller bands that get hype in the scene, and then they decide they want to go indie, you know, and then, but then they do it too early and they fucking kill their careers. You know, they don't stay in the Warped Tour incubator for long enough like some bands do. You know, Warped Tour can really be an incubator for your career. You look at a band like Of Mice and Men who used it for that and really just sort of blew up inside of it. And you have these indie bands that are, you, they start out as scene bands and they're like, oh, we want to be cool and be in Pitchfork, so we did one run on Warped Tour, now we're going to go try this indie thing. And then those bands end up falling off. Modern baseball.
Absolutely. And he says, I'm going to read this quote directly. Kevin says, I always see bands in their early going say, quote, I don't want to tour with this band, or quote, I don't like that scene. Embrace everything you possibly can, okay? Mm-hmm. Embrace these bands. And I've seen these bands, the Law Disputes, the Balance and Composures, the Modern Baseballs. Those bands have done very, very well on Warped Tour, but they say, oh, we don't want to be a part of that scene. Right. And then I watch what happens with their crowds, because they'll get hot for a bit and then they'll settle into this thing and they never get as big as they possibly should because they don't expose themselves to the maximum amount of people. I tell every single band that I work with to embrace everyone. You are not too cool for scene kids and other scene bands. That is such a bullshit mentality, and it's one of the reasons why our scene is falling apart. There's so many walls being built, man.
I was glad Kevin said that.
Yes.
Specifically, because you think about like Balance and Composure. They could have been the next Brand New. Instead, they don't fucking matter anymore, and nobody buys their records because they just got, you know, their heads up their asses, and they got way too cool for everyone.
Man. Yep.
You know? This interview left me feeling just sort of just bad for Kevin. He's just been dragged so much. And like, he talked about kind of how when there were problems on the tour, like all this drama that happens, artists used to come and talk to him about the problems. You know, he's got bus one parked in the same spot every day. Like he says, artists can always find him. And anybody who knows Kevin knows he's the nicest dude. You can always go talk to him. He's super approachable, even to fans, you know, and younger bands. I know plenty of younger bands who Kevin will talk to them every day. And now instead of bands coming to him with their problems, like, oh, this happened on Warped Tour and I'm upset, these bands just go to Twitter and rant about it.
Right.
And blow up, you know, the news cycle. And, you know, it's like they're not respecting Kevin anymore. And it's like, it's just, it's gotten off the rails. And it's so sad to see, because Kevin's a good dude and he really does care about the scene. And he's done so much for it. He's given us Warped Tour, which was our life for so many years.
Right. He wants to see bands succeed. He wants he wants Warped Tour to stay around. He doesn't want to shut this down.
I know so many instances where he has gone out of his way to help bands succeed when they were doing everything they could to shoot themselves in the fucking face.
Mm-hmm.
From bands, from any band, you know, from small bands to bands like From First to Last, Kevin has always been there to help out. He wanted this music community to thrive, and he did everything he could.
He did do everything he could. I think that needs to be said, and I think people need to understand that. Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone has bad judgment calls, and he admits it, too. He was learning over the last few years, and I think it just got too much for him, you know? It's our world that we live in is not in a good spot right now, and anyone who works in it can see it. And if someone tells you that it is good right now, they have no idea what they're talking about. And it's just so sad to see, man. We're just broadcasting the end at this point.
So who do you think we might see on the final Warped Tour?
So I think this isn't going to be representative of where the scene is at. I think he's going to pull out a lot of stops for this one. And as we saw Katy Perry tweet about Warped Tour this week from 2007, she posted on Instagram, and Kevin tweeted her, and he's like, we'll give you the exact same guarantee as 2007. I'll throw a barbecue party just for you. Just let me know what you want and we'll make it happen.
Yeah.
So he's gonna try. I think we're gonna get stints of big bands throughout the entire tour. I think we're going to get...
Too bad Katy Perry sucks now and she would never do it because she's so out of touch with reality and she doesn't realize that could actually be a cool move for her career. Right. But yeah, I definitely think, you know, we might see Fall Out Boy. We could see Blink on a couple dates.
Paramore.
We might see, like, The Used. Definitely Paramore. I mean, depends on how indie they're feeling that particular day. You know, how Pitchfork core they're feeling. But, you know, I think you're right. We'll see bigger bands. They're not going to be doing the full tour. But yeah. I think Kevin will make it special. And he'll get, you know, some fan favorites. Maybe an MCR reunion? No, I'm
Shut the fuck up, man.
Not gonna happen.
Shut up. What makes this one different is the fact that they don't have a bottom line to make a certain amount of money to continue it to next year. You know, there isn't gonna be a next year. So let's go all out. And Matt and I know Kevin and we know how he works and we know that he's gonna deliver this year on a really big lineup.
And I can't, like, I'm not so sad about it because, you know, I'm older now. It's not for me anymore. Like, I would be really sad if I was 15 or 16.
Right.
You know? Like, that it meant so much to me then. It was every summer. It was my life. It was so fun to go and take part in all the fun of Warped Tour. I really genuinely loved it every summer and I looked forward to it. And what was your favorite Warped Tour, Tyler? Like, do you have a definitive one?
So my first Warped Tour was 2013. It was way in. I'm sure if I would have gone back in the day, my favorite one would be 2006 when Under Oath dropped To Find the Great Line. Or
you were late though to Warped Tour. You were listening to scene music like fuck before that.
I couldn't find a fucking ride growing up, man. No one would take me. That was the problem. I'd ask every summer. I'm like, who's going to Warped Tour? Nobody. Mm-hmm. No one I knew would go to Warped Tour. I would say just 2013 because seeing Let Live, feeling, seeing that band, that was the second time I saw him that year. Cause I saw him on Under Oath's farewell back in January.
Was that after they had the Under Oath endorsement too?
Yeah, it was after the Under Oath's farewell tour. So that was my second time seeing him that year. And it just felt like they were gonna pop the fuck off after that tour. It felt like we were gonna get another big band, and I loved being able to experience that firsthand. I loved watching Bring Me the Horizon from like 2 football fields away. It just felt like it mattered, man. And every year since, it has felt like it's mattered less and less. And I went this summer and I could walk across, I went to the Chicago date, and back in 2013, you know, walking around everything, seeing it all, it could take you like a half an hour, 45 minutes. I could walk from one side of the park to the other this year in 5 minutes and see all that I wanted to see. There was nothing there. The stages were so much closer together. Everything was downsized and it was so sad to see. And that, you know, we had bands like Jewel Vera, which I'll say personally, I love their new record, but they were on a headlining stage and there was literally
Wrong
like
move.
20 kids watching Wrong that band.
Move. So you're right. The size had definitely shrunk. My favorite Warped Tour, probably it's a toss up between 06 or 07. You know, I know 05 is the legendary one,
right?
MCR and Fall Out Boy. It's tough to compete with that, but personally, like 06, you know, I saw Silverstein, Census Fail, Aiden, Red Jumpsuit Apparatus up in here.
Shouts
to When They Mattered. Like, Face Down was popping off on the radio.
Shouts
it
to
was
those
a
2 years. Yep.
I saw Every Time I Die. It was just a really fun year. And then also 07, I saw on the same fucking stage. I saw Norma Jean, Gym Class Heroes,
nice,
We the Kings, and From First to Last, and then Chiodos.
Oh no!
All on the same stage. Like, that was a good year. It was a good year.
That's awesome.
You know, I have this written on my notes. What do we think this means for the scene? I think the answer is pretty obvious. It's fucking bad. It's really bad. This is like the scene losing if the scene is a solar system, Warped Tour is the sun, and we just lost our sun. It's bad.
We lost our home for the summer, man. That's what it comes down to. And bands aren't growing anyways, but Warped Tour gave it a shot, man.
We will see if a new one pops up. But we got to move on, Tyler, to our next story, which is Fall Out Boy. So Fall Out Boy released a new song and video for Hold Me Tight or Don't from their new album Mania, which is still happening, by the way. What did you think of this song, Tyler?
I don't like it.
Okay.
I feel like altogether it's maybe a passable, like a passable deep cut from American Beauty, American Psycho, but for it to be a single off of an album that we just gave them so much more fucking time to complete, this is a major disappointment, man. Like, we gave them space. They asked for time, and we graciously gave it to them. We didn't complain about it. You know, we were thinking the singles were pretty bad anyways. Okay, you take your time. You go write some Fall Out Boy bangers. This is not it, man. This is like a Jamaican-y kind of dance beat thing. And lyrically, every time Patrick says stuffing in this song, I just think of the food, and I can't get over the stuttering he does in the chorus and the na-na-nas. It's everything just falls apart. The hook isn't there. I will say the one redeeming factor I took out of this was the pre-chorus lyric, "I took too many hits off this memory. I need to come down." That is
classic Fall Out Boy line.
Classic Fall Out Boy.
To me, that is going in the Hall of Fame of Fall Out Boy lines.
100%
I love that line.
And it's such a rebound off of that bullshit that we had on the last single.
So yeah, I love that lyric too. Okay, so I'll tell you what happened here is Fall Out Boy fucking took a trip to Havana. They are cashing in on this Latin pop craze.
Yep.
I couldn't even believe how contrived it was. They are told it's Despacito took off, and you know, we told you, watch out, there's gonna be 100 Despacito copycats. Havana came and is now the biggest song in the world, and there's gonna be a million Havana copycats, and here come fucking Fall Out Boy with a Latin pop infused song, you know, with a fucking Dia de los Muertos video and Santana vibes all over the place. Oh my god,
I didn't even see the video.
Yeah, and it's total Day of the Dead all the way. And so shallow as it may be, I kind of like it.
Oh, like, no.
The na-na-na-na's, like, party jam, it got stuck in my head. I'm kind of sitting at, like, a 7.5 out of 10.
Oh, my God, no. I'm at, like, a 4.5.
I don't know if it's this. I'm in on the Latin pop thing right now, man. But like, I had fun with the song. Like,
oh,
I don't know.
God, have you ever seen The Social Network, the movie?
I love that movie.
So the scene where they're at that party and it's like a Jamaican party or whatever. I can't remember exactly what it was.
It's a Hawaiian party.
It's a Hawaiian party where they're showing a backdrop of Niagara Falls and it has nothing to do with it. There's a song playing in the background. This is what that song is playing. It's such contrived bullshit, and I am so pissed at Fall Out Boy right now.
How many times did you listen to it?
Like 5 or 6.
Okay. I listened to it like 4 or 5. It grew on me. Like, I didn't like it the first time. But yeah, it's just a fun party jam. The na-na-na's work for me.
I just think it's a
funny
bad
thing,
song.
Spotify busted on its own. My Spotify has become sentient, apparently, when the song was done playing. Spotify busted into Sugar. It just busted right into Sugar, and I let it play all the way through. Like, I just laid back and listened.
I would have, too. I need to clean my ears out after I hear this song.
Yeah, so that was, thanks for that, Spotify. That was weird.
That was
listening to that song. Yeah, but yeah, I like that lyric, and I like he kind of caps off by saying, "I got too high again, realized I can't not be with you." It's like he's talking about a girl, I think. You know, I think Pete's writing about a girl pretty clearly here. Is this drug, you know, he's taking too many hits of his memories with her. And I wonder which girl it is. Is it Ashley Simpson? Is it Bieber Rexha?
Oh,
I didn't say that. Who was it?
I did not. This song is not good enough to care, man.
All right, man. Well, you have fun not caring, and we will move on to our next story, which is Paramore. I have a feeling you're going to care a lot about this, Tyler. Paramore dropped a new music video for Fake Happy. This is the second single from After Laughter. What do you think of this one, Tyler?
This was a pretty interesting video. I can't stand the song. I said it when we reviewed the album on the show. Still don't like it. It's not having success at alt radio. It's just stalled around number 30, and it's not picking up any steam. It dropped to 32 this week. This video, I like the idea. Haley's like a really interesting figure in here, and I think it really fits the vibe of the album, even though I don't like the vibe of the album. I think it's accurate. What did you think of the video, man?
The video is pretty boring to me.
Oh, really?
I like I like Haley's shimmering suit. Right? I mean, I'll watch Haley do anything. She's just visually striking, and she's Haley, and she's a god. You know, I mean, I liked her suit. I thought Haley was fun, her energy, and I actually like Fake Happy as a song. I think that chorus it booms, but you know, like you said, it's sitting at like 32 on alt radio right now. This is their second single after Hard Times. This is the song they've chosen to push, and it's sitting at 32 on alt radio. The album After Laughter has only moved 113,000 copies so far, which for a band like Paramore, you know, who went platinum last time and won Grammys, that's very sad. They're playing small theaters. This song is only at 13 million Spotify plays compared to Hard Times, which has 64 million Spotify plays. So It's just the success is not happening. And it's very unfortunate. You know, I noticed in the video Haley walks by a basketball court that Chris Brown once played at.
Really? How the hell did you know that?
Good eyes.
Good eyes, but, man. Yeah, I would have never caught that.
So as Paramore fails, Haley has pivoted into the hair dye business. And she's doing really fucking well. And yep. I think this was a smart pivot because it's got her on the Forbes 30 under 30 list. Did you see that?
I didn't see it until you mentioned it to me when we were going over our notes for the show. That is pretty fucking crazy, man.
I mean, you can just see how it works. A Haley Williams hair dye company.
It's a no-brainer.
You know, she's raking it in. Uh-huh. And it's like now as Paramore fails more and plays smaller shows and sells less records, pivot more. Like Haley Williams pivot lipstick. More. Haley Williams, you know, blush Haley Williams, you know what I mean? Just do it all. Like, the brand of Haley Williams, I think girls will want to buy whatever fucking product she sells, you know? And just the Haley Williams beauty company, it'll be huge.
Do you think as she pivots more towards a businesswoman, does that open the door more for solo Haley Williams?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that musically, but, you know, Forbes, she must be making a lot of fucking money off this because Forbes is not putting her on that list unless she's making a lot of money. And the one thing we know she didn't make money off of is Paramore this year. Right. She didn't make any money off fucking Paramore.
Right.
You know, the label has probably not even recouped, you know, what they spent yet on all these videos and this rollout. So that hair dye company, it must be fucking pulling for her. She must be bringing in the cash, which shouts to Haley, she deserves it, you know?
Totally.
She's living in the same house in Nashville, like, forever. Like, it's time for her to upgrade, you know?
Yeah. She gonna go to LA?
I don't know. Maybe she deserves it. Okay. Let's move on to our next story, which is Sleeping with Sirens. They released a Christmas song called Christmas on the Road. And it's the holidays, baby. I'm stoked.
It is the holidays, man. And
I'm happy. I like this time of year.
I do too. Yes.
I like when bands do this shit. I like it. It's cheesy, but I like it.
I liked it so much better 5 years ago when they released a Halloween song called Dead Walker Texas Ranger.
Yeah. I like it, but I gotta tell you, this song, there's nothing inventive here.
It's just boring.
And I was disappointed. I was very disappointed in myself for getting excited about good. It potentially
you
being good
because
you know
be.
Like bands used to be really good at this, like bands used to do this on comps and shit. Remember, like,
name me
from
one.
from first to last put out Chris Massacre, which is just a fucking amazing Christmas song, you know? They put out 12 Days of XXXmas, like August Burns Red doing Carols of the Bells, you know, like bands
right.
just used to fucking crush these Christmas songs. Bands used to be good at it, and they're not anymore. And random fact about From First to Last, Chris Massacre, all they're doing in that song is shouting Pete Wentz's phone number over and over again, which is hilarious for a Christmas song to have those lyrics.
Oh my god, yeah. That's awesome.
So it just bummed me out, because bands used to be really good at this. They used to drop these cool Christmas songs on comps, and now it's like Sleeping with Sirens. This just feels like a B-side from the record, you know, they recorded while they were in the studio with David Bendith, and it just sounds like super cheesy and lame.
Absolutely. So what this is part of the Christmas album dump, and it's time to capitalize on Christmas, man, because all the major labels dropped a bunch of Christmas albums this week. Pentatonix released one. Sia released one.
That's ridiculous.
Sleeping with Sirens came out with this song. There's a couple more that I'm forgetting off the top of my head. It's time to capitalize, dude.
This, though, isn't going to capitalize. Like, no one's going to care. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to get a couple. It's going to. Does it break? break 200,000 streams on Spotify?
No,
you know,
fucking way, Maybe. Man.
Like, you but know, what like it comes they're not gonna down make money to, off this.
No,
like,
but what it comes down to is that they were sitting in a fucking boardroom at Warner Brothers Records, and they were like, "Oh, you're on a major label. You're gonna make a Christmas song." Little did they know that they don't understand their fucking demographic, and no one is gonna care.
It does make sense, and they could have made a good Christmas song, but they chose to make Christmas on the Road, which no one will ever remember. You know, and the band right now, like Legends, is sitting at number 18 on alt radio, so middling alt radio success.
It's not
but
a
the
hit.
Record, yeah, it's not a hit. The record's only sold 16,000 copies, so, you know, think about that for a second. Dude. Like, that's where they are, you know? Warner Brothers can't be happy about that.
Twisting the knife, that's what you're doing right
Their
there,
Their last
man.
Record did 35K first week. Warner's like, why is your total at 16K? Yeah, they're getting dropped, dude. It's not going to last.
I'm totally down. Let's drop them. Sleeping with Sirens is canceled.
Let's move on to our next story, which is Bring Me the Horizon. Bring Me the Horizon are releasing a best of compilation. Well, a best of compilation was announced for Bring Me the Horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to point out that this compilation is not endorsed by the band really anyway. Like, they're not promoting it or selling it. This is Epitaph Records, the band's old label, are putting out a compilation of all of the best music Bring Me put out while on Epitaph Records. And this is basically just a blatant cash grab by Epitaph.
I don't think there's ever been a more blatant move for money from a label. Because, so, perspective, Bring Me the Horizon signed to Columbia for the release of That's the Spirit, and they left Epitaph after Sempiternal. Something interesting, and you and I were talking about it right before we started recording the show, they released those first few EPs on Earache and Visible Noise, so Epitaph must have bought those songs.
It was probably part of the signing deal, was that they got all the old material.
Right.
It happens sometimes. So mm-hmm. we're talking, this compilation will include everything from 04 to 2013, I believe it said. So we're talking from their first EP, Edge Your Seat, to Count Your Blessings, to Suicide, to Hell, Sempiternal, all that stuff on one compilation that you will not see the band tweet about once. Because they're probably not, you know, they probably don't support this release. They don't want this music, you know, coming out at this point in their career when they've pivoted away from it. But, like, I don't blame Epitaph. Do you as a business strategy?
No, not at
the
all,
The band
man.
Are bigger than they've ever been. It kind of makes sense for Epitaph to do it.
Makes sense to lead a release with Traitors Never Play Hangman.
Right. Absolutely. It'll be interesting to see, like, how well it performs, like, without really pushing it, you know, and only Epitaph.
No one fucking knows. That's the problem. It didn't get a press cycle. No one knows that this is happening. Like,
I mean,
no websites posted about it, did they?
I was just reading about it on Metal Hammer.
Okay, so the metal blogs posted about it. I didn't see AP post about it. I didn't see Rock Sound post about it.
AP didn't post about it, huh?
I don't think so. I might have missed it. Yeah, it's just, it's going to sell like 5,000, maybe, if that. That's what I'm saying.
It all depends.
It does, but I just don't think it's going to get any push whatsoever, and Epitaph's reach is just
minuscule.
Kids
have been missing this old shit. You know, we saw that video of, you know, Ali doing Pray for Plagues, and the shit just went off. You know what I mean? Kids kind of miss this old shit, so it is kind of a smart time to be giving this as sort of an ancillary product for the Bring Me fans to consume, you know, while they're dealing with the band growing and changing.
But it's not a reissue of any of those releases. It's just a greatest hits album. And if you want to go listen to these songs, just pull up Spotify. They're all on there.
Yeah. I mean, that's my feeling on music in general. Yeah, I don't know why anyone buys anything, but, you know.
This is a little different. There's nothing special about this release. There isn't any unreleased tracks. They're all available on streaming. There's nothing new.
You think Brett from Bad Religion ever thought he'd be doing cash grabs? I mean, shouts. Like, shouts to Epitaph for doing cash grabs. I mean, that's fine, you know? Like, that label has got to not be doing that well, right? I mean, who's their biggest band right now? Falling.
Yep.
And that record is not doing great. I mean, what's it at right now? 30,000 copies or something?
If that.
30, maybe 30. I mean, what else they got going on? I know they really don't. They really just bit on that Joyce Manor title fight bullshit hard, and you can tell that's gonna hurt them.
It's just fucking over, man.
They
title fight was
they,
so 2013
bit on emo revival so hard, and they thought that these bands were going to carry them, and I think they've lost a lot of anymore as a result. And that's a shame because Epitaph used to be a huge fucking just powerhouse label.
Right.
And, you know, they're kind of not. We saw that, you know, with their partnership with A Day to Remember didn't exactly, wasn't the perfect partnership for ADTR releasing Bad Vibrations.
Yep. And I've heard quite a few things.
It didn't work for Sleeping either, you know, with Madness.
Yeah, although there's a reason why they left.
Gotta say Epitaph did a better job than Warner Brothers.
I mean, Epitaph had a little bit more to work with, but yeah.
Oh my God. Okay.
I don't know if I could talk about that album anymore, man.
Yeah, man, it's okay, man. We never have to go there again.
Don't worry.
It's done. It already happened.
Yep.
It's out. It's in the garbage. It's done. Okay. Let's move on to our pop story this week. Shouts to Nick. Selena Gomez dropped her video for Wolves, her new collaboration with Marshmello. First, we didn't really get to talk about this song yet, Tyler, so I want to talk about the song first.
Cool.
What are your thoughts on Gomez and Marshmello's collaboration, Wolves?
Banger Nation, man. I wasn't feeling this much elation about this song when it very first came out. I loved it right off the bat, but I didn't love it this much. Like, this is creeping into my Songs of the Year list, and I really, really think it's going to be a hit. It has been added to so many fucking radio top 40 rotation lists, and they are really pushing this song. And I think it's going to be a hit, and I think it's really going to put Marshmello on everyone's radar. And if you listen to the episode over the summer, I shouted him out. I knew this dude was going to be special. If you go back, you can listen to, he kind of came up alongside Skrillex. Sonny kind of infamously shouted Marshmello out in his interview with Katie Couric. And ever since then, Marshmello has just been blowing
very
up.
Marshmello sounds very early Skrillex influence. Like,
yes,
he definitely owned a copy of Scary Monsters.
Yes. I mean, they were bros when that happened. They knew, you know, they knew each other. So it makes sense that he's been able to capitalize off that wave. But he does it in a different way. And when you hear a Marshmello song, you know it's him. It's kind of like when you hear a Dance Gavin Dance song, you know it's Dance Gavin Dance. And I think having that signature in EDM is very special because a lot of EDM can blend together. But Marshmello's just special, man. He's got something going on, and this song is fantastic. But what do you think of the song, man?
It's interesting. So you obviously came at it full speed at the Marshmello angle, which I think is cool because I think Marshmello's dope.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the big hit right now. Is it Silence, what it's called?
Yep. With Khaled.
Yeah, that's Khalid. Crushing it, you know, mm-hmm. and now he pairs. But I kind of look at it more from the Selena angle. Like,
okay.
It's interesting to me because, you know, I didn't like Selena for a very long time as a singer, and I've just sort of came around on her. It was that It Ain't Me track that, like, really won me over. It was mm-hmm. one of my favorite songs of 2016. And that was her. Selena's been struggling to find, like, her perfect spot in the pop atmosphere. And in that situation, she paired up with Kygo, you know, an EDM DJ, and mm-hmm. it worked out really well. So what we're seeing is here Selena's doing the same thing. Like, I'm going to pair myself with an EDM DJ of note, Marshmello, and see how it goes. And it seems to be working. I like the song. I don't know if I'd go as far as a banger nation like you. I'm at like a 7.3 out of 10. It's very enjoyable, you know? I like it. Not a lot of substance, but it is definitely good. Did you watch the video?
I did watch the video, and it is a very seductive music video. But
yeah.
I'm kind of bummed there was no Marshmello appearance.
Okay, so you must have not watched the end, because there is a Marshmello
does
appearance.
He show up at the end?
You see, which I actually thought this was really cool, is it zooms out from Selena at the end of the video, and they go to the pool, and the Marshmello head is just floating at the bottom of the pool.
Oh,
and I like that. I think that's cool that he's not shoved into the video. You know, it's just very subtle. Like, I liked it. I thought that was, like, a slick move to just kind of, like, the Marshmello head was just upside down floating in the pool the whole time.
Man.
But,
so I'm watching it right now. That's just creepy. Yeah.
It's cool, though. It's subtle. Yeah, rather than have him in the corner the whole time while she's there looking all sexy.
For sure.
He's just creepy in the corner. I think it's subtle and cool for him to do that. You know, yeah. Whereas Deadmau5 would have been, like, hopping all over the fucking, you know, swimming right. in the pool doing laps. Like, Marshmello's cool enough to, like, be low-key about it, you know,
so,
and let Selena
yeah.
kind of shine. But another thing I noticed in the video was her clutching her stomach a lot, which uh-huh. I thought was really interesting, because she just, you know, had that surgery
mm-hmm.
on her stomach, and showed her scar and everything, and I thought that was just interesting to see her communicating that in a music video.
Yeah, she's been through a lot this year, and I'm happy for her that she's having so much success this year.
Absolutely.
This has definitely been like the biggest year of her career musically, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, she had the hit with I Want to Look Good for You. Like, that was her first like legitimate big hit, I'd say.
Right.
And then she had the smash with Kygo. And now she had this song. I don't know if it's going to become a smash, but, you know, it's getting traction for sure. I got a question for you, though.
Okay.
Who is better, Selena Gomez or Hailee Steinfeld?
Ooh. See, that's tough.
There's a reason I asked.
Okay.
Because I think they're similar artists, right?
Mm-hmm.
Both of their singles came out at the same time. Steinfeld's is Let Me Go. And they both do the same thing. You know, they're both these singers who they don't really sell a lot of records, but they have very good voices, and they hop on over EDM DJs for songs, and they have these big hits. And Gomez right now is at number 20 on pop radio, and Steinfeld is at number 23 with her song. Who do you think is better?
Oh, see, that's so tough. I honestly like more Hailee Steinfeld songs than I do Selena songs, but I like this Selena song better than any Hailee song. So
really?
Yeah.
So, you like it better than Let Me Go, the current Hailee single?
Yep. I just think it's a better song. And I think it's going to have a lot more success than that song.
They're close. 20 and 23.
They're close right now. But I think this one's going to shoot up and that one's going to stall out around 20.
They're very similar to me.
They are. But I think this one's executed so much better. And the fact that the artwork is so wrong makes me like the song even better.
Yeah.
It's just a cheesy kind of sweatshirt design that you see people wearing at like county fairs with wolves on it and the moon in the background. And then you got fucking Marshmello just like peering over into the distance. And it's just hilarious. But I like this song better than any Hailee song. And I think it's going to have more success than her current single.
Yeah. So Selena's gearing up for, I think it's LP3. You know, like this is,
right.
They're trying to make a single catch, which it's almost weird they didn't do it after the Kygo single hit off. It ain't me. Because like you're at that moment. But I don't think they knew that that was going to work as well as it did. So they weren't ready. So now they're going to try to do it again with Marshmello. And once the single hit takes off, that's probably when you'll get the Selena Gomez album announcement. And we might see her actually like move some units. Who knows, you know? While we're talking about Selena, are we going to address the elephant in the room? Are we going to talk about Biebs? Are we going to go there?
No, man, we can't.
We're not going there?
We just had this conversation. Right. We got to cut the pop
next story. Next story. All right. All Time Low played their song Good Times on TRL, which is back on TV, yo. What did you think of their performance on TRL, Tyler Sharp?
I couldn't tell you because I fell asleep. This is just sad to see All Time Low fall so hard. This was the most boring performance I've ever seen. I don't think Alex has his eyes open once throughout the entire song. He's got this constant 5 o'clock shadow that he refuses to get rid of. And the song is just boring as hell, man. This isn't a banger. They need a banger. And obviously, like we talked about, the album was a flop. It dropped over 60% in first week sales, I think it was. And I will just say, getting a gig on the reboot of TRL isn't the greatest thing in the world, like it may sound like, because performances on the new TRL have not been received well at all.
No. You know what it is TRL reboot, TRL 2.0 just isn't happening.
It's not,
you know what I mean? It's just
all,
kids,
man,
just don't give a shit. Like, you know, when TRL was a thing, people gave a shit.
You know,
I watched it every day when I was a kid. It mattered. We all knew the reboot was gonna matter because nobody watches MTV anymore. You know what I mean? And this All Time Low song sucks, like you said, Good Times. It's just boring. And to show you how little it matters, on YouTube, this performance has 2,700 views.
Oh, my God.
Like, that's not even worthy of the TRL name. You know what I'm saying? And so the band are in this spot where, like, Renegades has only sold 40,000 copies, you know, which is pretty terrible when you think about it.
Future Hearts did 80,000 first week.
Right. And this record is, you know, limped to sell 40,000 copies on a major label, you know, Fueled by Ramen. and the Good Times, which was, for whatever reason, they got behind that as their single. It's dropped off the charts now. It's gone.
It's been off for a while, man. It's been off for a while.
Why was that the single? Why in the first place did they even choose to push that? I don't know.
Nothing about this makes sense. It's such a fucking hot mess, and it's just a representation of where the scene is at. Like, if you just watch All Time Low's year in 2017, it's just like, oh, well, it makes sense that the scene's going down harder than the Titanic did.
We are chronicling the end, my friends. Real quick, Tyler, before we go, Real Friends dropped a new standalone single called Get By. I just want to know quickly what you think of it.
I really like it. And this is the first time I've liked a Real Friends song since the last EP came out. They went to LA to write new music. I don't know where this was written, but I'm pretty sure they hooked up with some people who helped them get their shit together. And this was really fun to be excited about Real Friends again. I like Dan's raspy voice. I think musically that riff is there and it feels fresh. I like it. Where are you at with it?
This song bored the fuck out of me.
Oh,
it sounds like a B-side from The Home Inside My Head that they just saved, and they dropped it to promote their upcoming tour. 5.5 out of 10. The song sucks.
Wow. I'm at a 7.5. Yeah.
Okay. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. That's it for the show this week. We will see you next time. If you have any questions, send them in to notescene@gmail.com. If you enjoy the show, please take the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Give us those 5 stars, and we will love you.